Welcome to the Nerd Outcast podcast. Today we discuss the 1986 film Aliens. Welcome back. I'm your host, Chris Bashan, and I've assembled a panel here today with me. To my left is...
Mark Soloff.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
How you doing?
Great.
Cool.
Rob Shoemate.
Hi, Rob.
Hi.
How you doing?
Playing with bags.
Those are my cats. Just ignore that. And over here we have...
Patrick Sweetman.
Hello, Pat.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be in your apartment yet again.
Oh, yes. And over here we have...
Erin Klein. And cats.
And cats.
Speaking of cats, Aliens starts with a cat.
Aliens does start with a cat. Who wants to... So we're talking about Aliens. Who wants to recap Aliens for us? Mark, you did a great job last time of Alien.
You.
Do you want to do Aliens?
I will do my best. All right. Imagine a world in which Sigourney Weaver playing Ellen Ripley, we learn her first name in this, is discovered by salvagers, deep space salvagers. She's in stasis, cryosleep, whatever. With the cat from Alien 1. She survived her horrendous ordeal, destroyed her old spaceship. They pick her up. She is returned to Earth, I assume? They take her to Earth, or is it just a space station?
They take her to a space station above Earth.
Okay, so yeah. She's in orbit above Earth. She learns that she's been asleep for 57 years. Her old life is essentially done. And since she destroyed a giant spaceship and the company is saying they don't believe her about that alien story, she basically can't get her old job back. So she's working as a cargo loader pilot. Sleazy company man, Paul Reiser, offers her an opportunity to get back on her feet. The alien planet, or the planet where they initially discovered the derelict spaceship that had the xenomorph inside of it, the facehuggers, it turns out they colonized it. The Earthlings colonized it, and they've lost contact with the colony.
So she is tasked with going out there with a bunch of Marines to investigate why they've lost contact with the colony, and then all hell breaks loose, and it's a spectacular movie, and you really should go watch it.
I was getting to that.
I know. Well, we have to keep it under 2 minutes.
Scene three.
Scene three, page 54. So, Erin, you are the outcast for this.
Again.
I'm trying to keep it consistent. You like this movie.
I did like it.
You did like it. Well, let me ask everyone then, first question. Did anybody see this in theaters?
No.
1986.
No, I saw it on HBO probably about 1987 and I was a kid and it scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah.
Wow, you were like, wow.
I was like 12 then.
He was a year younger than me.
Yeah, no. Well, you wanted to see the first one in theater.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Which is kind of crazy.
I like space movies.
I don't think this was aimed at children.
No.
Should have been.
I didn't understand that back then though.
Would have kept us in our place.
Well, I guess my second question would be, was this the first one of the series that you all saw?
I honestly can't remember.
For me, it was.
I don't remember which one I saw first.
This is the one I saw first.
Yeah.
I knew of the first movie, but for some reason, the second movie, at least at the time that I was aware of it, was a really big deal. Yeah. So it was the one that I saw, ended up seeing first.
Well, and since this one is kind of a borderline action movie, I think it played more, you know, on things like HBO. It was definitely, a broader audience appeal. Because the first one's effectively a horror story in space.
Yeah.
I think that during my formative years, Alien 3 was out in the theaters. I think it was released, and so... I got my parents to take me to it, and I wanted to see what the deal was, or like what the prior story was. So I watched Aliens, and that one really captivated my imagination. Alien, I probably watched third or in spurts. I thought, as a kid, I thought it was boring and had poor quality special effects in comparison to the other two. But Aliens, I really latched onto. I remember they sold action figures. of all things, of them. Yeah. And as a kid, I had some of those.
Thank you, Lucas, for showing us the way.
Wait, this had toys? This had toys?
Yeah.
Really?
Space Marines.
I don't think they came out with the toys when this was released.
I think it was afterwards.
Yeah.
I remember toys with the comic book.
The little mini comic book.
Because they had the alien, they had the cargo loader with Ripley and everything.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They would have these little translucent face huggers that would come with each of the alien types. Oh, that's so great.
Well, then let me go on and ask, what is the initial impression from each of you about this film? And Mark, if you don't mind, I'd like to start with you.
Initial impression, like my first impression as a kid, or how does it strike me now?
Both.
Okay, as a kid, I remember thinking it was really interesting, like the motifs of it, the sort of recurring things that happen. The face hugger gets you and then it bursts out of you and it's got acid for blood. Like, I thought all that stuff was really cool. And that kind of captivated me. Now, I think that the series does a lot of kind of does a lot of things that we see time and time again in horror stories and sci-fi stories. It does those, but well. I don't know if it did them first. The idea of you, a parasite, transforming the victim into a thing that will be dangerous. I guess that goes back to like vampires and werewolves and stuff.
Yeah, true.
That's an interesting idea, and I think Alien does it in a new way.
Yeah.
And it is not derivative of previous things. Mm-hmm. So I like that.
I saw a lot of these type of movies all about the same time. So I'm pretty sure I watched Alien then Aliens because I saw them all about the same time as I saw like Blade Runner and all of those. And so I was just like on this sci-fi high at the point the first time I saw this. And so I freaking loved this movie the first time I saw it. And with the subsequent viewings that I have, I still love the movie. The older I get, the more I like Alien more. And it, of all of the movies, is my favorite.
My initial impression when I was a kid was it scared the hell out of me, like I said, because I was on HBO and I flipped on late, not really knowing what it was. And I flipped on just in time for them to get back to the ship and for Bishop to be talking to Riley and everything's happy. And then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose and you're seeing Bishop torn in half and not knowing he was an alien at first kind of scared me. So that it took me a while to come back to it, but as far as the impressions today, I mean, it's a great sci-fi movie. It's, you know, contemporary classic, effectively, though at this point it's what, pushing 30 years old.
Yeah, almost.
Mm-hmm. I believe I saw this one first before Alien, and I view it more as a comedic sci-fi action.
Bill Paxton really helps with that.
Yes. I think I laugh more at this movie than I get scared. And I think the first one was more a horror movie. This one was more of a sci-fi action.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. This one definitely didn't have that kind of thriller, edge of your seat element that the first one did. And actually none of them have since the first one. Not even the third one.
They tried to go back to it with the third one, but it just didn't work.
You know, you've all kind of touched on something I wanted to go on and talk about, so we'll go on and chat about it now. So the first one is definitely a horror film.
Yeah.
Science horror, whatever you wish to call
thriller,
it.
Space thriller, whatever it is.
James Cameron comes along and decides to turn that into horror action.
Yeah, throw some Space Marines in, you get action.
Yep.
He's good at doing sequels.
He is. So something interesting about that, previously we discussed Alien, and what we found out was Alien was a commercial success, but it was critically very mixed.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Ebert, what did I say? Called it a unimaginative poverty of a film. Well, according to Roger Ebert, he loved Aliens quite a bit more. He gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars and called it a painfully and unremittingly intense film, a superb example of filmmaking craft. The Time reviewer Richard Schickel, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, said it was a sequel that exceeds its predecessor in the reach of its appeal while giving Weaver new emotional dimensions to explore, which I wanted to chat about that too. I think probably Aliens is definitely the more accessible film.
Mm-hmm.
No,
and to a certain extent I will agree with those reviews, especially Roger Ebert, that as far as a movie, the depth of the acting and stuff and the fullness of the story, I think it's definitely much more complete. where the first one, though I do love the first one for what, you know, it is a great movie, is the acting at times can be a little, you know,
one-dimensional.
Yeah. And it is pretty much just run and hide from the alien or try to find it and kill it. It's, or this one at least has a few other things going on.
It does. I think narratively, the first one, honestly, I don't think the first one has any flaws in it, narratively speaking. Like, these people come across the ship and they can't deal with the situation. I find it strange that on a mining ship that's going to be gone for, I'm supposing, years at a time, there is not a gun on board, but there isn't.
They still haven't come across alien life forms at that point, so.
Well, you know, that was one thing we were chatting about. And in this one, especially some of the interactions of the Marines, when they talk about it being a bug hunt, I'm trying to find out or figure out if they have encountered aliens
before. Well, they do mention, there's that one moment where they're all sitting around the table right before the iconic hand knife scene, where they're talking about a shore leave where one of the Marines may have hooked up with
the
male.
Arcturian poontang.
And it didn't really matter because they're both kind of the same, the male and the female of the species.
Yeah. So they must probably have run into aliens before. Not this alien, obviously, but...
Unless it's a human settlement with a bunch of hermaphrodites.
Right.
Well, within that 57 years, they probably had that growth of alien discoveries.
Yeah, and in 57 years is when they met everybody.
Yeah. That's right. While she was asleep.
The Vulcans came down.
They already had first contact in Prometheus. Come on.
So, I mean, it does... make me realize, so you're right, the first alien, you know, I'm thinking it's a mining ship. They should have had a gun rack right there in the cockpit behind the captain.
Well, what I was trying to get at is, in the sequel, these Marines are very well trained.
They do have Bill Paxton with them.
Yeah, they do have Bill Paxton, who plays a great, I'm losing it, Marine.
Every line I can think of from the movie is his
line. I think he won an award for that. The Saturn Award. I don't know if they still give those out. I don't even know what that is. It might be a car.
I think they stopped giving those cars out too.
Yeah. We're selling them.
Well, what I wanted to get back earlier was this movie. They go into the processing plant, and they can't fire their guns. And I had a friend say to me, "Well, if I'm in that position, I pull my team out, since they can't use their weapons, and I create a plan B." And I think who was the writer? I think maybe James Cameron was the writer.
I'm not sure.
I think he was.
I think he wrote the treatment.
You'll notice in movies throughout time that, you know, directors and writers tend to treat, you know, the military as stupid as they need to be convenient. So
there are some very conveniently bad things that happen. Like, it's in the processing center, so they can't fire. Gorman is really inexperienced.
Exactly. It's like, well, so, we need them to do this to propel the storyline the way I want it to go, so they're going to make an incredibly bad decision. Yeah. So,
which I understand that has to happen. I wonder if there is a better narrative way to do that. Yeah. You know, create obstacles that don't actually weaken the heroes, that they have to overcome those in addition. I don't know.
Now, this is not explicitly stated in the movie, but this is the group of colonial Marines who are supposedly working for the company or with the company. So maybe they are not like the best and brightest. Maybe that's not the U.S. military or the Earth military. Maybe they're sort of a colonial Marine is like a merchant Marine or a mercenary or something. I don't know. But maybe within the universe.
Maybe it's like the Salvation Army.
Yeah, they normally do charity functions.
They go around collecting clothes and used furniture.
They do cosplay.
And also occasionally hunt aliens.
And nukes, and they have a really awesome ship.
Right.
And they've got their own robot.
You know, I did find out, I think you mentioned something about this, Mark. James Cameron, supposedly through the internet grapevine, had all the actors who were playing Marines... First off, spend about 2 or 3 weeks doing rifle training, marching on Marine bases, actually learning somewhat of the basics of being a Marine, although that's not really enough time to do it. He also had them all read Starship Troopers.
Huh.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Now, the film Starship Troopers is very different from the book Starship
the
Troopers.
The book is really good.
The book is supposedly really great. We'll talk about that some other time. I thought that was a very interesting note. Let's move on. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I just had the realization that this movie actually starred Michelle Rodriguez before Michelle Rodriguez was in movies.
With Vasquez?
Yeah.
Her first
movie. Maybe that's how Michelle Rodriguez based her acting around, was the character of Vasquez.
Yeah. Is she in Predators? the woman who played Vasquez?
No.
Okay, is that a different actress?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go on and talk about specific characters. I want to go on and talk about Ripley, because Aaron, you made some very interesting comments about Ripley in the first film, so I'm kind of curious what you think about her in the second film.
Okay. She definitely has a more, I want to say, stronger feminine vibe. She's a mom. You see her more
vulnerable. You don't
actually
get that in this particular version of the film.
That is correct. In the theatrical release of the film, there is no mention of her being a mom. It wasn't until the special edition
that
they inserted that back in. Okay. But go on and you did watch the special edition, so let's talk about that version of it.
Okay. Well, and even without her being a mom, I think they show her being more vulnerable because she's approaching these Marines or whatever they are, and they're giving all of their accounts of what they think is going to happen. And she's like, I don't know. I mean, I hope you're right, but these aliens are crazy. So, you know, I think she's more vulnerable in this movie.
She definitely starts out vulnerable. And I think it's her journey of not being vulnerable anymore. Because this is something that's tormented her since the first film. Because in the first film, there really isn't much to her. Like, she's second in command. She survives. But it's in this movie where everyone should be listening to her, and they don't, and then she starts taking charge and start overcoming her fears.
Literally takes charge.
Literally.
Yeah.
Taping guns together and going into the nest by herself.
Well, and that's when you bring the mother figure in. Because the little girl, she's not doing it to be a hero. She's doing it to protect her young, even though it's not hers. And I think that in itself is vulnerable. It's kind of like Game of Thrones. Where,
Arya?
With...
The Lannisters.
Yes, the Lannisters. And it's like, you can only love your children because you have this drive to protect them. So it's not that you're doing it for yourself or for anyone else. You're doing it to protect the innocent.
It's what the Queen... That's what the Queen's doing, too.
Yep.
Yeah, it is what the Queen doing.
That parallel and that awesome standoff scene between the Queen and Ripley and Newt in the eggs.
Yep.
So, speaking of the Queen, and we can jump back to Ripley also. So, for the second film, they show essentially the entire lifespan of the alien. Do you guys think that took away from it? Because the first film, you don't really know much about the alien. It just comes out, it starts killing people, and there's this mystery as to why this thing is here.
And I think it was good they did that because it expanded the entire, you know, mythos behind the alien race.
The second one.
Because otherwise, it would have been just another random alien chasing people around and killing them. But at least now, it's a giant threat. You see that they propagate the species, you see where the eggs come from and stuff. So I like the fact that it expanded this enemy. It wasn't just a one-dimensional thing that, you know, the boogeyman comes out of the closet and chases you.
But they did do something in this movie that they didn't do in the last movie, which I think we made comment of last time, where they say, well, perhaps there's something laying these eggs, something we haven't seen yet.
I think it also makes it more believable because there is a backstory. It's not just, here's this alien and here's this alien. To actually know something behind it makes it more tangible.
I really like seeing the life cycle of the aliens. But I think my introduction to the world of aliens was with the movie Aliens, and that was like the big thing. The Queen is the uber boss. So if I would have never known about that character in the franchise, I don't know how I would have reacted to it. That was like my first installment. So I kind of equate it to like Hannibal, which is, it shows you so much of what Hannibal Lecter is into and what he's like out there in the real world. If I would have started with that movie or book and then gone back and saw Silence of the Lambs, I don't know if I would have appreciated like the danger and menace of that character when you just get little hints of him. Mm-hmm. I think that the aliens, like the worker bee aliens or the warrior class aliens in this, are sort of, their power is taken down many notches. Yeah. You know, they grab some people and carry them off. But they're wasted by machine gun fire all
there
the time.
There were no guns in the first movie,
that's
though.
That's true, yes.
They do explode when shot at, but I think that's a choice.
Yeah.
Well, no, because then their acid goes flying everywhere.
Never hits Ripley, though.
Never hits
Strangely
Ripley.
Enough.
Thank goodness. They're much faster in this one. Like, they show them jumping off walls mm-hmm. and, like, climbing all sorts of crazy spaces.
Yeah.
Which I kind of really like
and that. And they're armored in this one.
They are armored. They do look different.
Mm-hmm.
I think they look different because he needed them to blend in with the walls.
Well, yeah, in every Alien movie, they've looked a bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's an evolution of the thing until the Alien Resurrection, where it was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
We're not talking about Resurrection.
Oh, come on.
We're not talking about Prometheus. So you mentioned the Alien Queen. So when I first saw this movie, I did not know that she climbed into a power loader and fought her. So when you get to the end of the film and she does that, I lost it. I immediately thought that this was the best movie I've ever seen, and I can't believe I'm seeing Ripley climb into a power loader and fight an alien queen on board her ship.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing.
Yeah. It's got everything that a little boy wants.
Yeah.
It's got army guys with guns. It's got flamethrowers. It's got scary monsters. It has...
giant exoskeletons.
Yes.
Yeah, giant exoskeletal robots having a fight with a huge monster. That's like Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla in space.
Yes. Good reference.
Dude getting ripped in half. Yep. Spoilers.
Isn't that in Starship Troopers? Don't they like climb into suits?
In the book.
In the
book,
I'm talking about just the book. They climb into suits to fight.
Jump a mile at a time and fire grenades off the entire... Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That were only in the movie.
That wasn't in the budget for the movie.
Yeah, right.
Well, the Alien Queen design I thought was really, really great. Supposedly that puppet is like 14 feet tall. I don't know if it's still...
I believe it.
I believe that too. I think
it taller on screen.
Yeah, it did. Well, he really knew how to shoot that thing too. And supposedly there was no post done.
Wow.
Yeah, like that was all puppet. He just knew how to shoot it.
Yeah, and at the time, I mean, you know, post-production special effects were extremely limited. Mm-hmm. There was only so much you could do.
Yeah.
I love the design of that thing, because instead of having just the armored head, it's almost serpentine in the way it moves.
Yeah.
It just adds another level of horror to her.
And it's got the big sort of translucent, sharp teeth that are dagger-like. You can kind of see through them, like icy spikes. It's just so cool. And I think, I'm not certain, but I think on occasion the queen breathes out a kind of fog or mist.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Maybe that's where the heat comes from.
Laying of eggs.
Ugh. The disgusting egg sack.
I wonder how much oil or whatever that was they used in that sequence they had to use to just coat everything.
Blech.
I think it was canola oil.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're making that up?
No, I'm not making that up. I think that's what it was.
If I could make an interjection that I wanted to say when I was watching it last... realistically, within the confines of the universe, I think that Ripley would have been killed in that power loader. That thing is
so
friggin' slow, and the queen alien is a fast, bug-like critter with a spike whip tail.
Well, the queen, to be fair, was a little worn out. She just laid an egg on the shuttle before engaging in hand-to-hand combat.
That is true.
Which we find out in the third movie.
And she's been through emotional strain as well.
Exactly. She just lost her entire brood.
Yeah.
You know, I actually really appreciate that the power loader is so slow, because I feel I see a lot of movies where the fast guy beats the slow guy, but in this movie... like, Ripley just knows how to work it, even though it is slow. It's not necessarily a disadvantage because it's so strong. She can just kind of shield herself while she's knocking the queen around.
Yeah.
I still think it would be slower than what the movie was representing it to be.
Probably.
And I didn't want to say that before, but yes.
That's all right.
And also...
it's just his favorite moment from the movie.
I know, right?
You just trashed my favorite moment.
Effectively, it was Ripley fighting an alien driving a giant futuristic forklift.
Yeah.
Yes.
So. This would have ruined really cool stuff that happened after, but when she first grabbed the queen's head with the pinchers...
She couldn't. If she did, acid would just go splashing everywhere.
That's a good point.
I've always thought about that, and then I thought, well, maybe she doesn't want to get acid on her Reeboks.
Yeah. But if the queen is killed and Ripley is killed or injured, it's still the end of... the aliens.
It would be a heroic death.
Yeah.
But the mom wants to be with her soon-to-be daughter. Hopefully she adopts Newt.
Luckily she has a long life after that.
So yeah, just to touch back on something we did notice in tonight's viewing is everybody was wearing Reeboks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
the official shoe sponsor of Aliens.
Do you remember in
with Velcro,
I Am Legend, the Will Smith version? There's a scene where he's tying his like Adidas, and he's like, Adidas 2009, vintage, baby. I was like, ugh!
Yeah.
That movie, yeah.
It's because they couldn't get the Air Jordan contract to get signed.
So. Anyway, that's a whole nother ball of wax.
One thing I feel Aliens does a really good job of, which the first one, I don't know, it didn't hit me the same way. When people die in Aliens, I'm kind of sad that they go. Like Sergeant Apone?
Yeah.
I'm really sad he dies. I really liked him.
He was a cool character.
He was a cool character. And he doesn't get to be cool very long.
No.
But he does it in spades.
Man, the lieutenant could have stuck around longer. He was so cool. He was on top of stuff. He had full command of his men.
No. Yeah, that's weird. They keep alive some of the characters. You're like, ugh, why didn't this guy die?
Yeah. Well, I noticed that again in like Alien 4, Alien Resurrection, where it was like some of the characters I liked the best were the first ones to die.
Yeah.
The ones that made it to the end of like, really? They're alive? Yeah. Really? Shove them out the airlock.
Speaking of airlocking people, I thought Paul Reiser in this was awesome.
Oh, I was mad about Paul Reiser.
Has he done any other films? Because I know he was on Mad About You, but I don't honestly...
If I recall, in the 80s, he showed up in some other stuff. He never really starred in anything, but he would show up in...
Yeah, roles. He's always like the subordinate. He's not in Beverly Hills Cop, is he? Yes, he is. He's in the first Beverly Hills Cop in
New
York.
His partner in Detroit, yeah.
Or Detroit, you're right.
But I thought, I was thinking about this, and like, on most recent viewing, paying attention to his lines,
yep.
It could have been really easy for an actor to do it very cold and aloof,
mm-hmm.
or like a kind of stereotypical, hey, cool guy, 1980s businessman. And I thought he brought a level of actual humanity to it, where he's not just trying to pretend to be a nice guy. Like sometimes he is a nice guy. Yeah. He kind of sticks up for Ripley, and it's not necessarily all a power play maneuver, but he definitely has that disconnect of viewing people as worthwhile.
I think that you know, it adds nice depth to his character, that I don't think that he's necessarily a bad person to begin with. He obviously gets there, but I think he's trying to balance. He's trying to be everybody's friend and nice guy. At the same time, he's also got his corporate drive and, you know, his marching orders, what he's supposed to do.
Well, and the other thing with Paul Reiser is, I mean, you have in the context of the movie where everyone's like, oh yeah, kill the aliens. However, in the whole realm of society and different cultures, that's what a lot of outsiders look on and be like, why did they kill that race? Or why did that happen? And he is actually bringing in, you know what, this is kind of a humanitarian thing. We shouldn't kill this race. We should just leave and leave it alone.
No, he wants it for a weapon.
Yeah.
Well,
right,
that
I know, but it does bring that into...
He raises a question that nobody else does. Like, this is a different species.
Yeah.
What right do we have to destroy it? Now, he's saying that for his own gain, but nobody else even thinks of that.
Right.
They do a much better job. His character is very well written because they didn't want to retread the Ash route from the first film.
Right.
Especially since he was part of the company.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? And I don't know. Like, I think the warmth and the logistics that he throws out for not exterminating, you know, are great covers for what he actually is, which we learn later on, is an asshole.
Right. And orchestrated the whole death of the colony by saying it was okay to send them there.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bad call, Mark.
It's a bad call.
It's a bad call.
Well, I had a thought, you know, you were talking about that kind of like 80s businessman. I think it would have been awesome instead of Paul Reiser if we'd had like the Patrick Bateman from American Psycho playing that character.
Speaking of other characters, let's talk about Michael Biehn.
Yes.
Michael Biehn. So first thing I want to throw out there, he was not originally cast in this role.
Well, he was free after the Terminator killed him, so.
He was. James Remar was originally... have you ever watched Dexter?
Yes.
He's Dexter's dad. That actor.
Spoilers.
Yeah. He's in the first episode, maybe. But he eventually left the show because he left the movie because he had artistic differences with Cameron. Huh. Surprise.
I heard Cameron's very easy to get along with.
I know. I don't know.
I mean, he's very open to other people's suggestions.
I know. What do you guys think of Corporal Dwayne Hicks?
Michael Biehn kicks ass.
Yes, he does.
He's really good at playing a soldier.
Yeah.
Navy SEALs.
Futuristic fighters stopping Terminators.
We got Terminator, we got Aliens, we got, you know, Navy SEALs.
The Abyss.
The Abyss, mm-hmm.
Oh, I love him in The Abyss.
A lot of James Cameron movies.
Yeah.
So. James Cameron likes using him.
I thought he was fine. He didn't contribute a whole lot for me. He was, like, charming and had a good heart. and had that bond with Ripley.
Yeah.
But I think he was overshadowed by all the other, like, character-y Marines that were more interesting to
I think his role mostly was to be that stable rock, the good moral center that was also protecting Ripley throughout until she kind of took over.
The definite link into the Marines themselves, yeah.
And that's what I really like. As opposed to having all these men who are assholes, you have this guy who's actually a legitimately good guy. And even as far as the way he does his job as a soldier, he seems more down to earth. He seems more serious. Like, during the briefing, he's the one who's trying to get right to the, you know, what is this mission? What is this going to be, you know?
His character is the one that I was hoping was going to be developed more, because his relationship with Ripley is kind of sudden for me. Like, he is explaining the gun, or I can't remember what it was, but he's like, it's not like we're engaged or anything. And that was just like, it came out of nowhere for me.
So. The locator, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, the locator.
What about by the end of the film?
I mean, by the end of the film, I forgave that, but it was still too sudden for me.
Okay.
So, I think one question, he was a corporal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Corporal. So, I mean, he looked like he was at least his late 20s. I mean, did he just get out of Colony Marine boot camp or something? Because, you know, it was like, I thought by this point he'd at least be a sergeant.
Maybe he had absolutely no leadership.
You know, maybe he got knocked down a few times for punching out a commanding officer.
Maybe he's always sleeping on the drops, so he's always missing the mission.
Yeah. He is a narcoleptic. That's what you don't know about him. He's real bad in the field, unless he's, like, totally in a life-threatening situation. If he's on guard duty, it's over. Yeah, I understand that actor was upset with the outcome of his character in Alien 3. Yeah, he thought he was going to be included in it.
I think everybody was upset with the outcome of his character in Alien 3.
I think everybody was upset with the outcome of Alien 3.
Yeah.
Supposedly, he was so upset with the outcome that they had to pay him as much as they paid him for Aliens to use his image for Alien 3.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen that one.
You're not missing.
Yeah.
A lot of lice.
It's better than Alien Resurrection, sort of.
It is better than Alien Resurrection.
It's strange.
And well, it's better than the second half of Alien Resurrection.
The director's cut is interesting. That's all we'll say.
It is.
Well, the other nice thing about Alien 3, that Joss Whedon wrote that.
What?
Yeah.
Well, he wrote Resurrection. Did he write? Did
no,
he
wrote
helped,
Alien 3.
He helped write Resurrection.
Oh, that's taken him down in my esteem.
I know, right?
I don't know.
I'm looking this up. I'm sorry.
All right. Back to Aliens.
Aliens.
Let's chat about Bishop.
Yeah.
Because I freaking love this little robot.
It's because it's Lance Henriksen, dude.
Lance Henriksen is, he's like the poor man's Chris Walken.
It's very well put.
If you need like a creeper to be mysterious in the background.
Well,
Dan O'Bannon, same guy that wrote the first one.
One thing that they do with...
you're right.
One thing that they do with Bishop that I really, really appreciate is he pretty much quotes one of Asimov's laws.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool that they started even just bringing some of that in. He says, I cannot harm or by omission of action allow to be harm a human being, which is one of Asimov's three main laws. Which book is that from?
I, Robot.
Is that I, Robot?
So Aaron, are you familiar with Isaac Asimov?
Are you familiar with Isaac Asimov?
I am.
Are you?
Somewhat.
Are you familiar with Isaac Asimov?
He's a cool guy.
How'd they go?
The Humpty Dance.
Anyone who watched Aliens in the theaters know what the Humpty Dance is. Same era.
What I don't understand about Bishop is why they decided, well, for an android, for him to look
artificial
older.
Person.
Okay, artificial person. For him to look older and with wrinkles.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Do all androids have to be hot and blonde like Prometheus android?
No, I'm just surprised that they would make an android imperfect.
Oh, wait. Oh, I got the answer, which we kind of find out later in various spin-offs. Bishop is modeled after a dude who designed him or worked for the company.
That's like Star Trek.
He was like CEO. He was Waylon.
Mr. Waylon. Yeah. Yeah, it's like Star Trek.
Yeah, he's designed off of his creator.
Which is an Aliens versus Predator.
Nice.
Yes.
So retroactively, they made him look like the actor.
But he also looks that way because that's how Lance Henriksen looks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay, something I was confused about. I was like, okay, if Burke is doing company business, why isn't Bishop helping him? And then I had two different theories. Theory number one: Bishop is not a company robot. He is a colonial marine robot. They say they go out on every tour of duty or whatever on the ship. The other thing I was thinking is maybe Burke is operating outside of the company's designs. Maybe it's not his, like, manager. Hey, Burke, go send these people to this colony. Maybe he's like, this is how I'm going to get rich. I'll use the company's knowledge, and I will come back, and I'll be like, hey, guys, guess what I got for you? And then I'll get the money. But they didn't sign off on Burke doing it.
I kind of agree with that, because he does. He sends the colonists there on his own volition. Like, doesn't tell them what's going to happen when they get there. And that's... How many millions of dollars is this installation worth?
Yeah, they said it's a considerable dollar value or something like that.
Well, that's one of the biggest disconnects for me, is why they're sent out there, supposedly unknowing what's going on, but then they have a lab full of these aliens. Like,
maybe it's other colonists, because they send the family out. The one father gets face hugged. They bring him back. Then we're assuming he dies. So then maybe that little alien grew up and kidnapped more colonists. Yeah, I mean, it is strange that suddenly they do have like six face huggers there. Maybe they recovered some colonists who had been attacked and kept them around for some reason.
Could have
to
killed
study.
The colonists before they implanted the embryo.
Yeah.
And then the face hugger would disengage. And
see, what it said to me was that they knew that these aliens were there. And that's the thing. I don't know. Like, I have no idea how that came.
Well, they would
out.
Have had a medical installation there anyway.
I think that the idea is that they got the facehuggers after they had started being attacked by them.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the people mentions, Bishop is looking through the log, and he's like, oh, two of these things are alive. The rest are dead. One of them was removed from its victim before it could... impregnate him.
Mm-hmm.
He died in the removal process. So they have like a log of the having to, you know, get it off of one of the colonists. Something I was thinking is, this is the same planet they went to in Alien 1, right?
Yeah.
So there's that whole like weird field of eggs at the derelict ship.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be plenty of face huggers to like bust up on the new colonists, and maybe they caught one of them.
Was the queen there, or did the egg come
question.
First, or the queen?
The age-old question. In one of the Alien video games, you can make a queen egg, which creates a queen facehugger that produces the queen alien when it rips out of somebody.
Well, I think that's what you got in 3, too.
A queen egg. Yeah, Ripley had the queen inside of her.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, at the end of Aliens, that queen laid a queen egg. Facehugger egg on the ship.
Yep.
Well, what a very forward-thinking queen.
She was so worn out she couldn't fight off the...
Of course!
It's like Spock, where she's passing on her Katra.
Hey, no,
really?
This is
really?
This is
really? None of you... Really?
Like Jadzia Dax?
I wish you could all see the looks we're giving him right now.
Alright, moving on.
Should be ashamed of yourself bringing up Spock.
Since this is more of an action film, I thought it was really smart that James Cameron not attempt to copy what Ridley Scott did, where as far as not showing the alien very much, because he had to show the aliens in this. He had to show them a lot more and show them doing a lot more. But one thing he introduced, which I thought really helped the horror element of this film, is that motion tracker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just incorporating the sound of possible threat being nearby, I thought was great. And it kind of duplicates what Ridley Scott was doing in the first one. Because they had to come up with some reason to have Marines scared.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I, as an audience member, like, any time that thing went off...
Wait, that's inside the room.
Yeah, I know. That's 6 meters away.
They're in the roof.
We saw a motion tracker with Dallas in Alien.
Boy, that just did not work.
That was like a beta copy.
Yeah, that was 57 years ago from the time Aliens takes place. So they got better. But here's the thing, and I think this is like, maybe you could make an argument for this being a problem with the heroes, the Marines at least, throughout Aliens, is their motion tracker is still linear. It's still what is north, south, east, and west of me, and has no third dimensions, and that's how the aliens always get them. It's like, oh, they're above us, or oh, they're below us.
Stupid Z-axis.
And yeah, so maybe that's the thing, is these guys are thinking very linearly, linearly, and they need to be...
It's easy for you to say.
They need to be considering more options.
Well, any other characters or specific things you guys want to talk about? I've got a couple of last questions to hit you off with.
Bring it.
Oh, but not yet, not yet. Is there anything I haven't touched on yet that you want to talk about?
The elevator.
How the alien queen
knew. What did you say as we were watching the movie?
That just made me crack up.
The elevator?
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, why did the alien use the elevator or even know how to use the elevator?
I don't know.
Because it was there.
I don't know.
Well, you definitely get
to... It's because, you know, Ripley hits both buttons. She's in such a hurry. As I mentioned, it's the same reason I don't hit both buttons on elevator banks in case an alien's trying to
fall. But how does she know which floor to go to?
You know, it's a smart alien. I mean, she was smart enough to lay, you know...
A queen egg.
Knowing that there would be another movie.
You know what doesn't make sense to me? So they say, what, it'll be like... They can expect rescue 17 days after being overdue.
Yeah.
So what is overdue? Like, if they don't contact after 3 days?
Well, my thing was, how far away were they and how long were they in cryosleep?
Why did they have to go in the...
To get there?
Yeah, why'd they have to go into cryosleep
to begin with? If it's
17
days, ain't nobody getting there that fast.
Why don't they just stay awake for 2 weeks and just... I don't know.
Huh.
Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah. When I was watching it, I was like, why are they sleeping?
Damn you, James Cameron.
They go into cryosleep so they don't have to feed them for those days.
Yeah, there you go.
They have enough food for 2 days.
It's super cheap.
So much cheaper to freeze somebody than feed them.
Well, since we're getting pretty far on time here then, let me go on and hit you all with a couple of final questions. Question number one, what is your favorite scene or most memorable scene from this film?
Oh, there's so many good ones.
There are.
I'm gonna, okay, this is, I don't know if I can say favorite or most memorable, but one that really stands out to me in my most recent viewing is when Newt and Ripley wake up in the medical suite and the face huggers are in there with them. That is like such an awesome scenario. They're trapped in there. And it's the first time you see the, like, power, how strong one of those face huggers is.
Oh, yeah.
Because in the other one, it's just, whoop, and it gets on who? Nash?
Kane.
Kane's face. It's a
Nash?
I had a... Django? It gets on his face right away. And in this one, you know, they're choking Ripley, and you're like, of course, the tail chokes the victim, so they get weak, and then the face hugger can grab them. They're so strong, and this, you know, Newt is this little girl trying to smash it against the wall. And it had me on the edge of my seat, even though I knew what happens. That was an awesome scene. Totally awesome.
My favorite is the little moment where Ripley threatens the eggs with the flamethrower as she's saving Newt. And just the look she gives the queen when one of the eggs starts to open and just lays into her with all of her armaments.
You know, when the queen tells her minions to back off, like that sign of intelligence.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
The brood mind.
Yeah, the brood mind.
I probably have two. First being the Ripley at the end when she's in the cargo loader and the whole, you get away from her, you bitch. And then the other one, I just love the line. Just a classic, you know, game over, man, game over.
Yes.
I have been keeping up with current events.
I also really liked the scene between Ripley and the Queen. However, it's more because of the aliens, where like the Queen tells the other one to go away, and he just like slinks back. I always laugh at that scene. But also when the Queen tears...
He looks really disappointed when he does that.
But also when the Queen tears herself off of her fallopian tubes or whatever they are. It's just
ovipositor.
The ovipositor. Well, that's the little anus end that spits him out. I think the rest is an egg sac. I'm not a alien entomologist, and a xenoentomologist.
But again, yes, my favorite scenes are the ones that make me laugh in these movies.
Well, I'd have to go with the power loader. I'm glad you thought it was funny. No, I think that power loader... That scene, that had me cheering when I saw it as a little kid for the very first time. Like, I just thought it was great. Although the scene where she's in there with the two face huggers is really freaking creepy.
Yeah.
What is Little Kid? When did what? How old were you when you saw this?
28.
2 weeks ago. No, I think I saw this when I was about 13 or 14.
Okay.
Yeah. It was on TV, so it was edited. I did not see it unedited for a long time. But you know, like, since I saw this movie first, I didn't want to see the first one for a long time because I had seen, like, the aliens at their max threat.
Yeah.
You know, so going back to the first film and seeing just one pick off some minors, I was like, eh.
He means people who dig in the earth, not young children.
Not minors. So, my second question to everybody, well, I've got two left. First, which one do you prefer, Alien or Aliens? I'm going to make you choose.
I already have.
Which one?
It was Alien.
You like Alien better? Mm-hmm.
Aliens.
Trying to back it up.
Don't back it up.
Okay, fair enough.
I go with the first one. I mean, I love both, but the first one, I think, just has a little bit more for me.
Aliens.
You like the second one?
Yes.
Yeah. I like this. I think I like the second one too. I love both, but I think I like and enjoy the second one just a little bit more. So that leads me to this final little bit of discussion that I wanted to talk with all of you about. Which film is more important?
To who?
Resurrection.
To the aliens or to the human race?
I would say to filmmaking and cinema.
I would say the first one.
Yeah. Because first nobody one. Can hear you scream in space.
Yeah, the... Wow!
I can, however, hear you scream in an apartment.
I got bawled by a cat and I thought I was a facehugger.
You're really on edge. Are you drinking coffee?
Yes. In terms of, like, the precedent it set and the new conventions, and essentially establishing a franchise, Alien, I think, was way more important than Aliens. But in terms of my fantasy life and my interest in sci-fi and horror, Aliens was much more captivating.
Well, and also, yeah, much more commercially successful. Launched, you know, further sequels, obviously, then crossovers and everything else. So.
Yeah, Dark Horse comic books.
Oh my God, I love it. Aliens versus Predator.
The comic book?
The comic book is so good.
I hear it's pretty good. I've never read it.
Especially the first one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Pat?
Don't know. What was the question again? About how important they are? Or?
Yeah, which one is more important?
I think the first one. And I kind of agree with the same thoughts, you know. I think Rob had that it just added more to the, you know, the genre, the kind of, you know, horror and space kind of crossover. Well, the second one did tend to be a bit more of an action movie, even though it was a more well-rounded storyline.
I agree. Alien was more important, although I did not really see it in the time frame that would make me think it was as important. But going back through the bonus features and just thinking time frame-wise, Alien is, especially with the models and whatnot, was very important.
Both of these movies are movies I wish I could have seen in the theater when they were released. There's no way that can happen until my time travel device is ready to go, but... It would be neat.
Awesome.
I also want to make some bets on some past Super Bowls when that happens.
All right, Biff Tannen. Mm-hmm. Any other final thoughts, comments, suggestions, protests?
Prometheus?
We're not talking about Prometheus.
Prometheus. No. There was a lot of great vehicles in this one. There's a lot of action figures that can come out of aliens.
This was like G.I. Joe goes to fight aliens.
Yeah, like I liked their Lady tank Daisy. Car, their APC. I liked their drop ship. It's just like a lot of cool looking vehicles. The power loader.
You know, I feel a lot of movies later on, and especially video games, like just stole from this film.
StarCraft.
Yes. StarCraft. Mass Effect. Yeah. Starship Troopers.
Halo.
Halo.
Everything in Halo looks everything. Like a space marine weapon or a space marine ship.
Yep.
Here's something. When they were first loading onto the ship to travel to the world, whatever, it seemed like they were trying to compensate for Ripley's earlier, more masculine behavior with even more masculine women.
Like, oh, yes.
Yeah, like you see the one, I forget her name.
Vasquez.
Like, yeah, Vasquez. Doing the pull-ups and whatnot. It's just like they're trying to really make Ripley be the more feminine one with having these more masculine women.
Aaron, well. Have you ever been mistaken for a woman?
Yeah, exactly.
Rob, have you?
Thank you.
Yeah, Vasquez is a very tough chick, and Pat, I think what you spoke about with, what was that actress's name?
Michelle Rodriguez?
Yeah, she definitely is the 1980s Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah. This chick's last name is, what did I say it was?
I don't
Goldstein.
Know.
Goldstein or
Goldstein.
Something?
Nice. Yeah.
Nice. Well, you never know, you could marry into a last name.
This is true, this is true, but she's...
Any so, other...
I did have one another thought that... Yeah. Both movies, Alien and Aliens, I think was, and I was trying to think of another instance that may have preceded this, was it kind of turned, you know, your typical alien encounter in most movies and TV shows had been, previous to this point, had been more of a humanoid race or something, or maybe something on Star Trek. It hadn't been so much of this creature that was out, you know, more animalistic in ways that just, you know, wanted to kill you and really couldn't reason with it at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't think of a film in the 70s. Or 80s. Well, I mean, like, Slasher... we talked about it. Yeah, Slasher flicks were around, but those are, like...
They had just started coming out.
Yeah.
I think a realistic treatment of a completely inhuman alien foe... And I'm not a film expert, but I think you didn't really see so much of that in the 60s and 70s. In B-movies, there was all sorts of, like...
You started to have, like, the Blob and stuff like that. That it was kind of that... thing you couldn't control and stuff.
Or like people from Planet X.
Exactly.
Like the cheesy things.
Yeah.
But I think a realistic, honest treatment
of
that was not really done. And that could have been a consequence of having worse special effects technology back then.
Well, yeah, and I think it also helped feed into, you know, which helped movie making was the lack of special effects at the time. You know, you had to be more creative with, you know, what you could do to build up that, you know, threat and that anxiety.
Yeah, I like the use of puppets rather than always being a dude in a suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of...
Although these were guys in suits.
Yes.
But they moved very well.
Except for the queen.
I think they were gymnasts and dancers.
Huh.
Woohoo. Left over from the 1980 Olympics since I couldn't go to Moscow.
Yeah. What were you saying?
I like the Queen's movement more than the warrior aliens in this, and I think that's partially because the Queen has a lot of puppet stuff, and the warriors are obviously dudes in suits. Warriors, drones, I don't know the preferred nomenclature.
I think they prefer praetors.
Praetors. Well, according to an alien video game I played, the Praetor is different than the typical drone.
You can't think very much, man. I played the same game.
Yes.
There's some really good video games based on these series.
And some really bad ones.
Yep.
Ugh.
But we'll chat about those some other time.
Aww. Just a final note, we did look it up, and I was incorrect. Joss Whedon did write Resurrection. It was Dan O'Brien?
Dan O'Bannon.
Oh, Dan O'Bannon.
Oh, thank goodness. All right. He's back.
Alien Cube.
All right. Well, when we get to the Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection podcast,
we're not going that far.
Yeah, probably not. We might do 3, but that's
let's find another movie.
Prometheus. Oh, you're happy. No, we're not doing Prometheus.
No more Alien.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining me tonight. Do you guys want to plug any shows or?
Yes.
Go for it, buddy.
As I mentioned in episode 1 of this podcast, I also do a different podcast as a funny idiot scientist character. The podcast is called Blastro Podcast, and it is available for free on iTunes. So look up Blastro Podcast.
It's free? They don't have to pay money?
It is free. They don't have to pay money.
Wow.
I'll figure out a way to monetize it someday.
Yay.
But for now, and for the foreseeable future, it's absolutely free. And it's funny, and we talk about nerdy things. I mentioned Skyrim in the first episode.
Ooh.
I just want some subscribers.
A Blaster Podcast.
Myself and somebody else at this table, Chris, are both in a sketch comedy group called This Side of Witty. Depending on when you're listening to this podcast, we may or may not have a show. So check out This Side of Witty on Facebook.
What city can you
see? Oh, I'm sorry, the city of Chicago. I forget the internet goes everywhere these
days. The city of Chicago, where this wonderful podcast is podcasting from, there we do have a website with videos on it that may or may not be funny.
Thissideofwitty.com.
One final little thing that... Do you want to plug?
Sure. Yeah. If you would like a massage within the Chicago area, or Evanston, probably... go to, my name is Erin Klein, ErinClyne, LMT. So it's Erin Klein, LMT. And you can find me on Facebook, or you can go to amtamembers.com/AaronKleinLMT.
I got nothing to plug.
I know you don't. one last little thing I'd like to plug. If you're looking for the best way to view these films, I highly recommend the Quadrilogy Blu-ray editions. They look great. They've been cleaned up. They hold up very, very well. So if you're interested in seeing these films, that would be the route I would suggest you go.
If you're interested in the best way to record a podcast, I suggest with two cats in the room.
Yes, two very Definitely. Loud cats that are hungry. Well, thank you all for coming tonight. I've been your host, Chris Bashan, and with me tonight are...
Mark Soloff.
Rob Shoemate.
Patrick Sweetman.
Aaron Klein.
This is the Nerd Outcast podcast. Until next time.